Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Welcome to an hour of mind power. Today, we're going to be having an adventure in the mind with fantasy, with a wonderful guest that I have who is located in Lexington, Massachusetts, which is not too far from Boston. And as Peter said, Peter Shapiro, who is my guest today, it's where a lot of fighting went on for the revolution. Hello, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me.
Now, Peter, your book, Ghosts on the Red Line, I found quite unique. And I was fascinated with how, in the fictitious environment, you folded in so many areas of parapsychology. And this, to me, was really a lot of fun to read. And I was intrigued with a fact, and that is you are a management consultant. Now, how did someone with such a linear level of working environment and thinking get into what some might call the woo-woo side?
I guess there's several parts to that question. Why would I write a story about visitations from ghosts on the Boston's commuter system, railway system? And then the second part is, how is the story, how did I construct the story like a consultant would look at it, because it does involve a consultant as the primary protagonist. And I guess the first part is why write this kind of story? I don't know where these inspirations come from. It happens that it came to me while I was taking one of my early morning walks, which I took for about 14 years with a beloved dog that we had who had recently died. And maybe... just taking the walk with her, not really at my side, but on my mind, the topic came to mind. And the topic came first as a title, Ghosts on the Red Line. And then I was thinking, now, what would happen if people began to see their departed on the Boston's Red Line subway trains? How would they react? How would the city react? How would the authorities react? And so on. And the story just came from there. I wanted to make the protagonist a consultant because I know a lot about consulting. So the major protagonist, whose name is Harry West, is a consultant based in Boston, or Cambridge, actually, who is hired by the MBTA, which operates the Red Line and the rest of the transit system in Boston, to figure out what's going on, what's causing all the problems on the system with these visitations. And he goes about this task as a consultant would. His team is on the trains trying to analyze how these visitations are happening, where they happen, when they happen, and they narrow it down to a cause. They figure out the cause of the visitations as a consultant would do. So that's how I combine the two worlds. And because I come from a skeptical point of view about these things, and I make my protagonist also have a skeptical point of view. About them, he's looking for reasons why these visitations might happen that don't rely on the paranormal. They might be paranormal, but they may not be, and there's multiple explanations for them, and that's how the story is constructed.
Well, it's so true to life in so many respects. When people, and I have found this out through life, adamantly proclaim, "Oh, this cannot exist," once they have the experience, they seem to go to the other extreme and say, "Oh, my goodness, do you know what happened to me? Everybody should know about this." And that's one of the components that I really enjoyed in your book, because of how you folded in the paranormal, the investigation. It's not a Ghostbusters in the way that it's displayed on reality TV, but it really inspires the imagination. You have a delightful and, I would say, extremely powerful quote that's right in the beginning of your book. And it was quoted by Yai Pao Mai, and it was from a quote, and this was a translation that he did of Mo Tzu, and this is what it says: "Since we must understand whether ghosts and spirits exist or not, how can we find out?" Mo Tzu said, "The way to find out whether anything exists or not is to depend on the testimony of the ears and eyes of the multitude. If some have heard it or some have seen it, then we have to say it exists. If no one has heard it and no one has seen it, then we have to say it does not exist. So then, why not go to some village or some district and inquire?" Mm-hmm. Inquire. The aspect of curiosity, asking questions, finding out experiences. And the paranormal, really, in my mind's view, is very, very normal. Now, is there a red line in Boston, or is this... I know the transportation system in the Boston area is just absolutely incredible. I have a friend that just took her son to college back there, and he steps out of his apartment. He doesn't even need a car. He just steps on the transportation system, either the bus or catching a train, from what I'm told, and he's on his merry way to the college. Is there a red line in Boston?
Absolutely, yeah. The descriptions of the red line train, the red line runs from the far western portion of the metro area, or at least of the urbanized metro area, the far western portion of Cambridge, which abuts onto Boston. It's kind of the junction point between the city and the leafy green western suburbs, which start from there and go west. So it runs all the way from there, which is at the so-called Alewife Terminal, down through Cambridge and then down through Boston and south into another town called Braintree, which is south of Boston. So it's a major line. It was built around 1916, and it carries something like 240,000 passengers a day. So it's a major portion of the system. And,
well,
and these visit in the Ghost on the Red Line, these visitations occur on a portion of the Red Line between almost at the western end of Porter Square, Davis Square, and then down into South Station, which is kind of the center of Boston. It takes about 20 minutes to ride on that portion.
One of the people that you have right at the very beginning of the book, Riding the Red Line, this is an Asian lady. She gets very animated. She says, "Oh my God, Robbie, you've come back to me. Is it really you?" She's having a conversation with someone, and everybody around her is just, who is she talking to? She is very animated about this. People are giving her space. You set up quite a drama here, right at the very beginning of the book. And then there's someone that approaches and is wearing a uniform of the MBTA, and there's a character, Billy, that's telling this person all about what they've experienced with this woman talking to the invisible and then getting off the train. That was quite a powerful introduction, because the last sentence in that chapter is, "Whoa, maybe she was talking to a ghost."
Right. Yeah.
You have this. And it's just magical. It really pulls you in, right?
Thank you.
Away.
Yes, I think the one of the major parts of this scene is that Billy is just a kid, and what's kind of strange is, he's watching this woman named Molly Lou having her conversation with, and very, as you say, being very animated. And he, as we see here in Boston and some other cities, there's usually a sign up on the wall saying, "See something, say something." This really relates to terrorism and so on. But he saw something and he wanted to tell somebody. And when they approach the MBTA, the man wearing the MBTA uniform, the man doesn't blow him off. The man is actually kind of interested to hear his story. And that's an indicator that something's going on. Because, Billy's not the first one. This isn't the first time. And the MBTA is starting to get reports of these strange events on the Red Line trains. And they're beginning to see that something's going on. So they don't just dismiss him as just a kid with a big imagination.
Now, other characters are coming in to the story, and one of the primary ones is Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry is, well, he's a guy, he's had a pretty difficult personal life, and maybe that's the way I should say it. Let's talk about your character, Harry. You say he's very much like you, a management consultant, yet there are parts of him, parts of his life that you bring out here that are pretty tragic. What happened to Harry?
Well, Harry and his wife, Alexandra, had a child named Ariel, and, you know, wonderful, wonderful baby girl. And she is killed in a traffic accident caused by a drunk driver when she's only 3 years old. And as a result of that tragic event, Alexandra becomes very depressed and eventually wants out of the marriage. And so she leaves Harry, and they have very limited contact after that. And he has a shell around his own emotional being after that. He's becomes very businesslike and serious, but he guards his emotions. It was a very serious event in his life, and so he and Alexander really, although they were in love and everything, but they have very limited contact after that, except each year when they go to the parole board hearing for the drunk driver who killed their baby. And the drunk driver is trying to get out of jail earlier, and they don't want him to get out of jail. So they attend the parole board hearing and try to make the case that he should stay in and complete his sentence. And part of the way they're doing this is they're showing to the parole board an image, photographs of Ariel, their daughter, which Harry is using software to age progress so that she looks each year a year older than she did when she was killed. Saying here's what he took away from us and from the world, and a beautiful young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the contact he has with Alexandra, and that kind of sets up the visitation that Alexandra experiences on the Red Line.
Now, Alexandra is associated with MIT, which is a real big think tank for all intents and purposes, and some of the brightest people in the world go to MIT. And this is something, she's not afraid of thinking outside the box. Harry is a little bit more of in-the-box kind of thinking, although he can adapt. His process is just different from hers. And this is a woman, the characterization of her, she's very accomplished. And actually, in many ways, their personas are a good balance because of their differences. And that is something that they felt, but again, with the death of the child, as you describe it, then that's the case. Now, the word's really going out about the Red Line. People are hearing about these things, and the people having visions, people talk, the ones that see the individuals going through these experiences. And then there are so many different passengers. There's a woman by the name of Maribel, and mm-hmm. Maribel is on the train, and she sees her beloved dog. She's just thrilled. And the dog had passed away, and it's just as real to her as anything else. This is exciting. People are seeing those that they have loved right there on the train. And again, like you say, it's in this particular segment, and your story goes through how there is all of this discussion, and people say, I want to ride that section. Maybe I can be lucky. Maybe I'll see the person I love. But you also bring something that's very different, and that is a criminal. There is a criminal by the name of Wallace. He is a personification of the worst mafioso you could ever imagine. No gracefulness about him at all, or grace, I should say. He has no morals, really, excepting whatever he thinks he should be doing or whoever he should get rid of, he'll get rid of. And he has an unexpected visitation from someone that he eliminated. And that is an interesting perspective, too. So you really got into these various personas of different personality types and different thinking. Did you feel that you had muses that said, this is what I want you to express in this? When you were going through this, you probably had some of your own unique experiences in writing this.
Well, I don't know where the... I really don't know. It's sort of a mystery where the inspiration comes for these characters. When I started the story, I had the basic structure was people are having these encounters on the red line. What would they do? What would the MBTA do? What would the city do? What would other people do? And then it just began to fill in. What kinds of people are having visitations, and who are they having the visitations from? They just came. It's kind of mysterious where it comes from. But as I progressed through the story, these different characters somehow came into my mind and got down onto the page. I can't claim that any of these are specifically my experiences, and I've been a consultant also. You know, in addition to writing novels, been a consultant for a long time, and I've never had an assignment like Harry has to investigate why visitations are occurring anywhere, but on a red line or anywhere else. So that's not a typical kind of consulting assignment. But these things came to me as it progressed, and I figured I did want a character like Michael Wallace, the gangster, and then to balance that to some extent, I have a retired policeman named Franklin Brazil, who is visited by, also it's not a welcome visitation, he's visited by a criminal who he had arrested and who had died in jail. So there's a variety, and as you say, the visitation from the beloved Springer Spaniel, and in this way there is a connection to me because our dog was a Springer Spaniel, and of course Ariel, the daughter of Harry and Alexandra. And
now Harry, eventually, his wife sees Ariel. She
yes.
purposely gets on the train so she can see her daughter. She's hearing these stories, and there's more and more and more reports that are coming in. It's as if the veil between the living and those that have passed on is lifted substantially, so that there's just this very, very slight difference in harmonic that allows them to be seen and for communication. And that's something that Alexandra goes through. And when she tells Harry about it, Harry really doesn't believe in it, but yet he actually does see Ariel. And it's a shock to him because his mind says, I know that face. Well, like you said, he had been upgrading because of software what Ariel would look like when she grew older, how the face would grow and expand and change and shift and on so many levels. And it is really interesting. And then, of course, you bring in a psychic. And a psychic is saying, this is what's happening, sort of like having a portal. Now, this is, to me, a fascinating perspective because this is quite an interesting character. Was there someone that you met in the past that in some way inspired you to develop your character, Dr. Gourmelin?
Frances Gourmelin is also, but she is, by the way, I'm writing my third book now, which I'm working on now, is called The Portrait of Ignatius Jones, which does involve psychics, and she is the primary character in this, so I've kept her going. I'm maintaining my relationship with her and taking her to another place. But no, she's my first experience with the psychic is fictional, and that's through her. And she initially hears about these events on the Red Line trains, and she has although it doesn't get revealed until later, she has a personal reason for wanting to experience these visitations like this. But she's too well known in Boston to actually ride the train herself. She doesn't want to do that unless she has a train car to herself, all for herself, and that's not likely to happen, even though she suggests it to Harry. So she keeps trying to get involved, and she does manage to get involved with the help of a nephew who she kind of gets into, has him volunteer to help Harry and Alexander and the others as they investigate this stuff. So she's determined to become involved in the process, and she does eventually. But I think the key thought or sentence in this book is when Alexandra first sees Ariel, she's actually very, very shocked to do so, and she asks, you know, she says to this girl who rises, she says, the girl rose from her seat and stood in front of Alexandra. "I am Ariel," the girl repeated. "I've come back to you." And Alexandra says, "We lost you as a baby. You were only 3 years old. How could you have grown after that, after you died?" And the girl says, "I appear to you in the way that you think of me," the girl said. And that's really the key thought here for these visitations, that these ghosts or whatever they are appear to the people who are still living in the way that they've been remembered by the people. And that's really a major point of view about how these visitations, at least in this perspective, are occurring.
The psychic in the book says she is advised, do not let them close the door.
Right.
So there is another aspect of intrigue, because those on the other side are aware that there is an investigation going on and that there are people in this level of life that are trying to determine how they can stop this, because it is in a section, like you mentioned earlier, in a section of the railroad line that these experiences are happening, and they're becoming more and more frequent. And so this becomes one of the psychics, one of her positioning is don't close the door. You don't want to close the door for those that are on the other side to communicate. And you have an instance with Homeland Security you bring in. And there's all of this information. There's a mention of the MIT's Bionuclear Systems Laboratory. And being able to generate energy that allows for transmissions and a change in the electromagnetic field. And there is a laboratory. This is when it really gets fun. There is a laboratory that nobody knows about. So for conspiracy theorists, this is really good. And you have this lab. They're doing experimental work. They've been doing certain things, and it has created this open door between the worlds of the living, as we would express it, and those that have passed on. This is really something. This research, and we know there's phenomenal research going on with electromagnetic activity. I just had someone send me information, and it is real, on a levitating vehicle that VW has developed, that uses an electromagnetic system in a certain area, because there's so many minerals in the ground that they can actually have the vehicle float. It was just absolutely amazing. And we think of all the sci-fi movies that have been put out. Folks, it's there. So I just find this absolutely wonderful, how you are folding this stuff in, because it is something that people are working on right now.
Well, the system that you mentioned, which is called Y-tricity, where the electric power is transmitted wirelessly, is a real system. The MIT people really did invent this, and the applications for it are being developed. So that part is real. But of course, how it's extended here in the story, how the lab, which is using Y-tricity to try to effectively create life out of components, biochemical components, which are inert, but then when bombarded by this magnetic force or electric force, they begin to, life is started at a cellular level. And it's that experiment, which happens to be taking place not too far from where the Red Line passes and in its tunnels, that gets things going. So And that's part of what, of course, Harry and his consultants gradually work out is this is the source of these visitations. But it's what, you know, what they do about it after that, which is kind of interesting because, just as Dr. Gormelon receives what she believes to be a message from the spirit saying, don't let them shut this down. Of course, the MIT wants to shut it down. Not MIT, MBTA, the Transit Authority, wants to shut it down because it's causing chaos in the transportation system. And there's economic effects and everything else. So they want to stop it. But there are other people who desperate, and from Dr. Gormelon's point of view, also on the other side, who want to allow these visitations to continue. And that's where Alexandra is one of them also, because she wants to be able to maintain contact with her daughter, Ariel. And she comes up, she's an entrepreneur, as you said, very highly accomplished woman, and she comes up with the notion of, well, why can't we replicate the attributes of these red line trains where these visitations are happening? Why can't we replicate that in another place, like in a room, which we'll call a visitation room, and have the visitations keep on occurring there? And so people can keep visiting with their departed in the visitation room. And that's really the second half of the book where they undertake this. And of course, some people are in favor of it, and other people are opposed. For example, the gangster in Somerville, we see him again. He doesn't want to have these people he's buried in parking lots all over Somerville and Cambridge coming out and accusing him. And also it brings in the Archbishop of Boston, because theologically they're really on ground, which is contrary to church teaching. So there are all kinds of forces which are unleashed when Ariel and Harry and others start to develop the visitation room.
And that brings into life a company called Life Plus, and it creates all kinds of challenges. And I think you give a very good view of different levels of society and how they would react to this, and how in some respects money is a big issue. Other respects, it's gee whiz, what's been established, it's going to be destroyed, how do we preserve what we have? And it just gives such a fascinating picture of the human being and the thought process. And, well, I'm not going to give away what evolved here, but it is a fascinating read. You have so many twists and turns in this, and present all kinds of thoughtful positioning that involve fear, enthusiasm, joy, hope. There's so much here. It's the human condition, and also the power of love and how it can reach through the veil that separates us many times from loved ones. Peter Shapiro, your book is a wonderful, wonderful read, Ghosts on the Red Line, which actually is real. And you can find out more by going to ghostsontheredline.com, or you can go to petershapiro.com. And that's
Peter D. Shapiro.
Or Peter D. Shapiro. I beg your pardon. D like Donna Shapiro, SHAPIRO.com. So either one of those websites, he's got some other materials that he is coming out with. It's a fascinating read, and it will tickle your mind keys in ways that you would never have imagined. It is absolutely it's fun to read. It really is. And it's also, like I said, going to tickle those mental keys of yours that perhaps you have never activated or played with questions. Peter Shapiro, thank you so very much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. Appreciate it.
This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break. Check out Ghosts on the Red Line. If you like mystery, if you like intrigue, if you like science, if you like ghosts, this has a little bit of everything in it. I know you'll enjoy it. Donna Siebel here. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children?